There is no one right way to be a parent. We can actually bounce back when we can value the way that we're doing our own parenting. You are doing your best, and there's no one right way to do this.
Welcome to the Honestly Adoption Podcast, a show about adoption, foster care, advocacy, and becoming the best caregiver possible. Pull up a chair. We're glad you've joined us. Here are your hosts, Mike and Kristen Berry.
Friends and family, welcome back to the Honestly Adoption Podcast, or welcome to you if this is your first time joining us. We are glad you're here. My name is Mike Berry, along with Kristen Berry. We are your hosts for this show, and you are joining us for Season 25, Episode 216, and we're glad you're here. If you are a regular listener, you know that just last week, Kristen and myself, along with our good friend Nicole Jurgis, got back together in studio, and we started producing brand new content. And Nicole's going to be with us starting next week, back again. We're jumping in here with a special episode. We're sharing with you audio from a recent conference we did down in Louisville, Kentucky, called Family is Forever. And we talked about how to achieve resiliency as a caregiver. Big topic. And a lot of you are probably leaning in because resiliency is not something that we feel or even understand when it comes to the foster adoption journey, because we're tired, we're exhausted, we are at our wits' end. But this conversation, this session that we presented, we believe will bring you hope, because we give you practical insights, practical advice. You're gonna love it. We're gonna get to that in just a moment. But guys, listen, Insight Virtual Conference 2022 is just a couple of weeks away. In fact, if you're listening to this, which you are, we are less than 2 weeks away from this amazing conference kicking off on March 23rd and 24th. We have invited world-renowned speakers and thought leaders that range in topics from therapeutic parenting to attachment to sensory understanding, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, brain science, as well as former foster youth, adult adoptees. This conference is going to be amazing. It's going to give you insight to help you become a better caregiver or a better professional. If you are a therapist or pediatrician or educator, this conference is for you guys, and right now registration is open, but we just announced our big Insight giveaway. Register now and you qualify. You're in the drawing, you're in the running to receive some amazing door prizes from us, including a big book giveaway, conference bundle, our online course bundle, as well as some capable weighted products. Lots of cool stuff, guys. So you want to register now. Tickets are on sale for $59.95. And then, of course, $69.95 if you need continuing education credits. Yes, we do provide that, as well as lifetime access to the replay content. Just $99.95, guys. Sign up, insightconference.org. Click the link in our show notes. Grab your spot. Get in the running for these amazing door prizes, you guys. This conference is going to be amazing, and we hope to see you there. All right, let's talk resiliency. Let's talk hope. Here we go, on with the show. Yeah, so thank you guys for coming out on a Saturday morning early. But let's not kid ourselves. You guys are here because your children are somewhere else. And this is like date day. This is date morning, right? Listen, we know how that goes. Even if it's to Walmart, we're like, yes. Yes, just a break from the kids. So, yeah, welcome to you guys. And listen, how many of you guys are foster parents? Wow. Wow, brave souls. How many of you guys are adoptive parents? Permanency? Yes, awesome. Awesome. It's so good to be with you guys. You guys are our people. We are in this, we are on this journey with you. We are actively parents. We're the parents of 8 children. 6 out of our 8 children came from foster care. We fostered them, and then we adopted them. So, and we're in year 20 of this journey. So we've been doing this for 20 years. How many of you guys have been doing it longer than that? Anybody? Oh, wow. Oh, awesome. Okay. Is that the only anybody else? Wow. So you guys are crazy like us. Yeah. Yeah. We get that. We get that. But it's really good to be with you guys. And what we're going to do, our hope today is that we just, for the next several hours, you guys feel encouraged. You guys get a chance, as Blaine said earlier, to breathe, right? How many times do you feel like, man, I just feel like I can't take a breath, right? But in this place, we encourage you just to stop and just be in this place. My good friend Jason Morris, who co-founded Road Trip with me, which is a foster adoptive dad's event in the mountains of Colorado, he was talking this past year, and he said, man, I want to get a tattoo that says, you are here, and here is good. Because we need that, right? We just need to be present. We need to be here. But that's hard to do when you are parenting children who have a trauma history, who can take the life out of you often. So here's what we do. If you've never heard of us before, we are Mike and Kristen Berry, as Blaine said, and we are the co-founders of the Honestly Adoption Company. And if you don't know what the Honestly Adoption Company is, basically, many, many years ago, we recognized, much like a lot of you, that we were drowning, right? We were parenting children who we thought, you know, we could parent them the old-fashioned way, the way that we were parented. And suddenly, we came face-to-face with this reality that traditional parenting does not work with children who have trauma. And so it kind of put us on a journey to learn how trauma has impacted our kids and what it has done to behaviors and how we can parent differently and meet the needs of our children. And about 10, 11 years ago, we realized, man, we are alone, we're isolated, we're struggling. And we got to thinking, you know what, if we feel this way, we're pretty sure other people feel this way. And so we just felt called to start a blog, of all things, right? And originally, if you've been following us, and if you've been following us for a while, originally that blog was called Confessions of an Adoptive Parent. And lo and behold, there were other people out there who were struggling just like us. In fact, before we knew it, the blog kind of took on a life of its own, and it became like this wildfire that spread around the world. People were tuning in every week to listen to our podcast, read our blog posts, and that led us to believe, you know what, to this reality that people need resources. Parents just like you need to know they're not alone, need to know that there is hope. They need support. How many of you guys are like, man, if I could just talk to somebody on a daily basis, right? When everything is falling apart, if I could just sit face to face, kneecap to kneecap with somebody and just pour out my heart and know that I'm not alone, I could find hope, right? I could just find that step forward. Well, that's why we created Honestly Adoption, because we know how isolating this journey is. And so we created a place that provides parent-to-parent support and transformational resources to help you become the best caregiver possible. That's what it's all about. When you can gain a new perspective on your child and begin to parent differently and learn how to parent differently, that's a game changer. That's how you achieve longevity. That's how you achieve resiliency. You don't achieve perfection. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to break that news to you. This journey is far from perfect, right? That's why Jesus' first miracle was water to wine. That's a gift to foster adoptive parents. Take that home with you, right? That's our weird theology. We can say things like that on this stage because we're going to leave and go home, you know, and we'll let Blaine take care of everything, right? I'm kidding. But, you know, you guys are good parents and you are doing great things. And so that's why Honestly Adoption exists. And if you want to learn more about us, we're going to tell you all about what we do. And we, of course, have our table over here with books and some of our resources. But here's where we want to start. This is kind of a bummer, right? But we want to start with our collective problem as foster adoptive parents, right? That's kind of a bummer of a way to start, right? But our collective problem is this. It's a question, right? See if you can identify with this. And that question is this. How do we keep going through exhaustion, frustration, and confusion? How do we keep going when we are so exhausted that we cannot keep our eyes open at times, and we're exhausted because we're dealing with behaviors that are extreme. We're dealing with children who often behave out of their trauma, right? some of you who, those of you that are foster parents, you know this, you are dealing with a system that is overwhelmed, often inefficient, right? Doesn't provide a lot of answers or insights. They just kind of give you the children and they say, good luck, right? They don't mean to, right? But that's often what happens, right? Because they're overwhelmed, they're overworked, they're underpaid, right? So we're exhausted because of that. We're frustrated because we can't make sense of some of the behaviors we're dealing with, right? Why is it that we got in the car at 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, we went to the zoo, it was awesome, we had a great time, everybody was happy, and suddenly on the way home, the plane loses a wing, and everything is falling apart, right? Why is that? That's frustrating, right? Confusion, right? I don't know what this diagnosis means, right? I don't know what FASD or ADHD or ARND, I don't know what all those are just the alphabet mixed around. It doesn't make sense, right? This is our collective problem. And some of you guys would be like, wait, there's a lot more to this list. And I know, we know that, right? But this is kind of, we jumbled all together. This is our collective problem. How do we keep going through exhaustion, frustration, and confusion? Because let's be honest, some of you guys in here, you are this close to calling it quits. Because you're tired. You're exhausted. You feel like you can't do this anymore. We are, along with being public speakers, we also do one-on-one coaching with a lot of parents from all over the world. And every single week when we jump on those Zoom calls, that is one of the things that we hear over and over. I just can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do, right? This is hard. This is our collective problem. So here's what we want to talk about, right? If that's our problem, what do we do with that, right? We don't want to just talk about the problem, agitate the problem, and then that's it, right? Because that's not very encouraging. So what we want to do for the next few moments is talk about resiliency, right? So this is a word you may have heard, or it may have been like kind of in passing, but resiliency is the ability to bounce back, right? When everything falls apart, when you are exhausted, when you are frustrated, when you are confused, when you feel this close to quitting, to giving up, resiliency is the ability to bounce back. So how do we begin achieving resiliency, right? Well, number one, here's another truth. It's not through education alone, okay? Some of you guys have read every book. You've read our books, thank you very much. You've read Dr. Karen Purvis, you've read Lisa Qualls, you've read all these friends of ours that are authors, you've read every single book, Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah, you've read The Body Keeps the Score, right? The list goes on. You've read every single book. Back in the day, before the world burned to the ground because of the pandemic, you went to every single conference, right? You crammed your head and your heart full of education. And you came home and you started to apply that, but pretty soon life took over and you're like, what was that one thing that one guy's girl or person said at that big conference that you all hosted here a couple years ago? You don't remember, right? It's not through education alone. And it's not through finding the perfect parenting formula. Uh-oh. Some of you guys have also read those books thinking, this is it right here, right? I've got the 4-step plan. And listen, we don't always help that much because in our books, we do talk in bullet points, right? But I'm just telling you, it's not through that alone. It's not saying, okay, here's the behavior response blueprint. Here's the 4 things we can do, and everything's going to be fine, and everything's going to be great. And suddenly then, a week later, 2 weeks later, you're like, this isn't working, right? How do I keep going when this isn't working, right? So it's not through education. It's not through the perfect parenting formula. Resiliency begins with us. It starts with us. And this is twofold, you guys. Number one, we must help our children first and foremost achieve resiliency. Did you realize that the darlings that you're caring for have a lot of needs? Newsflash, right? Some of you guys are like, yeah, we know. We're well aware, right? Your children cannot achieve this on their own, right? Your children, because of their needs, And the inability to meet their own needs are constantly behaving those needs because they don't know how to articulate those needs. They cannot achieve resiliency on their own. It is up to us to step into that space and help them achieve resiliency, help them learn to co-regulate, help them learn coping strategies that can help them not just now, but in their adult life. Something that Kristen says often, and I love this, she says, we're not parenting children, we're parenting adults. Which means that big picture, what we do now echoes into tomorrow, right? How we parent our children now and what we do to help our children achieve resiliency, learn self-regulation, learn coping strategies, that prepares them to be the most successful adult possible. Now, some of you, like us, you will be parenting your children into adulthood. I'm sorry, some of you are like, that's a big bummer right there, right? That doesn't mean that they're going to be living in your house, because we are involved with two of our adult children daily. They don't live in our house. Good news. Some of you are like, oh gosh, thank you. You were going to run scared from this place. Like, this guy was terrible, man. He told me such bad news. Doesn't mean they're going to be living in your house, but we have to step into that gap. So it starts with us stepping into that gap for our children. And Kristen's going to talk about what that looks like here in just a moment. And number two, we must achieve resiliency for ourselves, right? Okay, starts with our kids. And then we're going to talk about ourselves and what it means to care for ourselves. And not only care for ourselves, but what it means to have a different perspective on ourselves as caregivers. That's the key. It's not just about self-care. We're going to talk about that. But it's also about how we view ourselves as caregivers. So the place that we start is resiliency for our kids.
So when I think about resiliency, I think about a rubber band. I am a veteran ponytail wearer. You are seeing my hair down for the one time that that's ever happened in the last 36 months. You're welcome. My mom would be super proud. I found a hairbrush and I packed it and I brought it on this trip. But when I leave here, I will get out a rubber band and I'm going to put my hair back up because that's the way I prefer it. Now, anyone who has ever used a rubber band for anything knows that you stretch the rubber band and it bounces back. You stretch the rubber band and it bounces back. And sometimes you have a bad rubber band. Sometimes you have that rubber band that you go to put in your hair and your hair falls out anyway. You're wrapping up some files, some important papers for work, and you go to stretch that rubber band and it snaps. Resiliency is when that rubber band bounces back. So today, when we're talking about resiliency for our children, or we're talking about resiliency for ourselves, we're talking about that ability to bounce back. So how does that happen? Resiliency happens in a natural way. We have a picture up here of a caregiver and a baby. So when we think about a baby being born, the baby is conceived, they live inside of their mother, and their mother meets their needs. That's just how it happens. They get everything they need from the time of conception until birth from mom. Then mom gives birth to the baby, and there are maybe people in the hospital that are also there to meet that baby's needs. Dad or a grandma is in the hospital as well. So mom takes the baby. The baby is crying because this is quite upsetting. And they're out here in the real world. And, you know, the nurse like wipes the baby up. I don't really know. I don't have any biological kids. I went to DCS and they were there in a pink sleeper. But this is what I gather from TV. And so this is upsetting. The nurse or the doctor hands the baby to mom. Mom holds the baby to her chest, and she begins to meet the child's needs. Over time, maybe mom is the only one that can meet the needs first, but now dad is able to meet the needs. Grandma comes in town for a week, and she helps with things around the house too. And maybe grandma fixes a bottle. Maybe grandma gets a nice warm blanket or changes the baby's diaper. Over time, that baby learns that when there is a need, the need will be met. And so when we think about that rubber band stretching, we think about the baby with the dirty diaper. The baby's upset, probably, crying, ah, this is miserable. But the baby can't say, hey, mom, I'd really like to discuss with you the state of my diaper. The child just cries. And then the caregivers come in and they meet the need. So what happens is that rubber band stretches and it bounces back. It stretches and it bounces back. Resiliency is formed in this very natural way of having a need and having the need met. How is it damaged? Well, we just talked about that crummy rubber band that's probably out in my car, and I'm gonna put it in my hair and it's gonna snap and I'm gonna have to drive 3 hours home with my hair not in a ponytail. Although I probably will ask Mike to take me to Target to get a new rubber band because I'll be super miserable if I don't have it. But we're not talking about sensory processing needs today, we're talking about resiliency. And so that overstretched rubber band is eventually gonna snap. It's not doing its job anymore. So when we're thinking about children and how this applies to our children, we're thinking about children who have some pretty basic needs. They need to be fed, but mom hasn't had work in a month, and there's just not much left. The child needs to have their diaper changed, but the caregiver isn't able to be there to meet that need. Maybe we're thinking about a child who is cold, but the heat's been turned off. We're thinking about the child that has the need to be with their mother, but they've entered into the foster care system. And even though there are caring adults around them, they don't smell like mom, they don't sound like mom, they don't look like mom, and so that rubber band is being overstretched. So we're talking about the rubber band that works, we're talking about the rubber band that's overstretched. What does resiliency look like in a situation of trauma? We can all agree, and we were told that we didn't need to talk about trauma and how trauma changes the brain, so we're all agreeing. We all experience trauma and trauma changes the brain, right? Mike mentioned the Oprah and Dr. Perry book, What Happened to You? I highly recommend that. I loved the way that they talked very realistically about how trauma changes the brain. So if you weren't caught, I mean, or you could read one of our books. I'm always endorsing other people's books. It's a really bad sales tactic. So anyway, or definitely buy our books. We talk about it there too. So we can all agree that trauma changes the brain. So what happens then when that child who's built that resiliency over time experiences trauma? It's going to happen. My brother and sister are two of the very best parents I have ever met in my entire life. I'm talking, they put Pinterest to shame. Okay, it's embarrassing. I look at my sister-in-law's Instagram and I'm like, I gotta block this for a little bit because I am the legit worst parent ever. She's got activities, she meets their needs immediately. They're so brilliantly smart. They're coming this afternoon and I'm super excited. My nephews are just about the best people on the planet, and now you know. But my brother and sister-in-law have had this consistent, safe, caring parenting. They have built resiliency in their children. Now, they hoped that they would never have an experience where that rubber band would be stretched as far as it has been. But a couple years ago, they were driving home from a day in the park. They really are the type of parents who go hiking every Saturday morning, rain or shine, bad weather or not. They are these consistent, fun, awesome parents that take their kids hiking on Saturday morning. So they're driving home from their Saturday morning hike on a street in Cincinnati. They live in Cincinnati, and so there are one-way streets. They're going the right way down a one-way street, and somebody comes speeding the wrong way and hit their car up into a steel pole. My sister-in-law nearly died from that. My brother is, you know, screaming and trying to get out of the car. The doors are dented in. My nephews are in the back seat, buckled safely in their highest safety rating car seats because, like I told you, they're perfect. And so they were safe. But all of this is happening, and this is wildly traumatic. My brother is trying to save my sister-in-law's life, trying to bust out of the doors. No logical thinking is happening because you can't actually bust a door open. He looks in the rearview mirror and sees his son watching this unfold. The jaws of life got them out of their car, took them in four different ambulances, and that's a pretty big trauma. The rubber band is stretched pretty far at this point. My youngest nephew, who had been doing self-led weaning because my sister-in-law understood the importance of connection and attachment, all of a sudden lost his mom for weeks. When she came back, she had a massive traumatic brain injury that took months and months and months to recover from. So what had built that resiliency in 1 minute was gone. But here's what happens. When we build that resiliency, there is still the ability to bounce back even when something really bad happens. Here's what I know is going to happen today when they come to my house. They are going to be hugging and loving their mom and dad. They are going to be trusting their mom and dad. They are going to go out to our barn. They're going to move away from mom and dad, which didn't happen for about a year. They didn't want mom and dad to go out of their sight. But they're going to move away from mom and dad, and they're going to say, "Aunt Kristen, will you take me out to the barn to see the horses?" And we're going to walk out there with mom and dad back at the house because the boys are going to trust that mom and dad always come back. Mom and dad are always there. Mom and dad always meet their needs. That's because resiliency had been built in the first year and 3.5 years of their life. So when we build resiliency, we can actually bounce back even when trauma happens, even when that resiliency is damaged. So how do we do that? All right, we can build resiliency through connection, trust, consistency, and time. What my brother and sister-in-law did with their kids is stay connected. They were always connected. They're in tune to what their children need, and they meet their needs all the time. They are always present and available for their children. Connection, trust. They built resiliency through trust. Those boys could trust their parents, hands down, no questions asked. Consistency, their needs were met every single day from the time that those boys were conceived until right now. Consistently, their needs are always met. And time. Over time, they had built up a whole lot of, I'm using the rubber band, but in my mind, I also think of resiliency as that ability to bounce back. We have a trampoline. I know, don't tell anyone. It was a terrible decision. But honestly, on kid like 7, we lost all ability to make wise choices. So we have a trampoline. So when I think about resiliency, I think about that ability to bounce back. So when something hard happened, there was that soft landing for my nephews. They could bounce back because over time, all of that resiliency had been built up. All right, so we're talking about ourselves. And a lot of times as parents, we're doing the thing. We're reading all the books. We're going to all the conferences. We're watching all the videos. We're doing all the research. And we're really trying to create this sense of resiliency in our own home. But then we go to church. Then we go to the neighbor's house for a cookout. Then we go to school. And we realize that we are not enough to create this resiliency. We need to create environments of resiliency, places where our children can also bounce back. And so we want an environment that promotes safety. Every place we're going with our children, whether that's school, the neighbor's house, our home, it needs to, I was going to say scream safety, and now I can't come up with another word because I don't have my thesaurus. Don't scream safety at your kids. Use another word. If you've got a thesaurus on your phone, come up with another one for me. All right, so we want the whole environment to say softly and patiently, it is safe here. Don't scream it. All right, so everything about that environment is safe. If you have read anything by Karen Purvis, she uses the phrase felt safety. We know we're safe. We know we have smoke detectors, and we know we have alarms on the door. We know we have locks. We know we have plenty of toilet paper. The kids coming into our home don't know that. So everything in the environment needs to confirm that this is safe. Everything in our environment needs to be, consistent. We need to meet our kids' needs over time. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. We really believe in keeping our kids' privacy private. So I will just say that over 20 years of parenting and 23 foster children coming through our home, that we've had a handful that did not have their needs met in some pretty basic ways, like food. So those children came into our home not believing that food is going to exist, not believing that the next meal is coming. So consistency is key here. We're providing safety. We're also meeting needs consistently. And for some of our kids, that could be a lifelong need that they have, a lifelong uncertainty, but they should know that we will always meet the need. So we may have a child that is really concerned about food, but we feed them at a regular time every day. Anytime we notice that there's a little bit of stress, we open that refrigerator and we say, hey, remember, there's plenty here. I promise there will always be plenty here. Would you like to help me make dinner tonight? I'd love to have your help. Hey, do you want to go to the grocery store with me? Let's go there together and we'll put a few things in the cart that you really love. So we're consistently meeting that need over time. And lastly, trust. Our environment should show our children that we are trustworthy and that the adults that we invite into their life are trustworthy as well. So when we're talking about school, we're talking about church, we're talking about the neighbor's house, we're being extra intentional to invite that larger community in a way that builds trust.
So we know that we have to help our children achieve resiliency. We need to step into that gap. But the second part of resiliency has to do with us personally and how we view our children, how we care for ourselves, and then also how we view ourselves. So a couple of things we want to talk about, four things in particular as we round out this particular time frame. We want to talk about a shift in our perspective on our children, number one. Okay. Number two, shifting our perspective on ourselves. And then we want to get into, and this is a buzzword, right? This is a word that can kind of create anxiety for foster adoptive parents. Self-care. Yikes, right? We know we need to take better care of ourselves. We know that, right? But we're so dang overwhelmed. We don't know where to begin, right? And then finally, and this may be something totally foreign to you, self-compassion. Right? So it begins with shifting our perspective on our children. You guys, you are parenting children who have a trauma history. You know that, right? You're parenting children who have extreme behaviors. You also know that. But here's something that happens to us as caregivers who are consistently dealing with extreme behaviors, meltdowns, rage, you name it, right? We often can get lost in the weeds and we lose perspective on what's really going on, right? We know that trauma changes the brain, and we know that a trauma history often dictates present behaviors, right? Your child is expressing an unmet need through behavior. Now, here's what I mean by getting lost in the weeds. Some of you would say, yeah, but I've been their parent, their caregiver for 10 years. They're just being rotten. They're just trying to ruin my day. I know this because these are the messages we get all the time, every single day. I know you said it's trauma, but I don't believe you. We get that all the time, right? So here's what we often see with our children, and correct me if I'm wrong, right? We often see greedy, lying, manipulation. That's a big one, isn't it? Stealing, fear, aggression, class clown. Anybody have the class? Anybody get called in for the class clown? Yeah. All I'm saying is I hope he is a stand-up comedian someday and makes millions and gives me a cut, right? Because we have been in more emergency school counseling.
We're going to be the butt of all
his jokes. We really are. He's going to be like this one.
We'll just have to lay low and not watch it.
Exactly, right? You're raising the class clown. You're like, oh my gosh, if I have to go in and meet with one more blessed teacher, right? Because my kid was the ringleader. Class clown behavior. It's trauma behavior. Hoarding, right? Hoarding stuff, hoarding food. I can write an entire book on the conversations that I've had about food hoarding and what to do when. And oh my gosh, they stashed an entire chicken under their bed. That's a true story. I'm not going to tell you all the details. That didn't happen with our family, but true story. Full chicken under the bed. It was left there for several weeks, right? What do you do with that, right?
Guys, this is the stuff that'll make your blood boil. Right? Am I right? It makes your blood boil because, especially for the parent, especially when you have a child in your home that you have had in your home for years, it's a little more understandable when you've been at this for a year or so. But when you have the child who consistently behaves with these extreme behaviors for years now, right? You're like, what on earth is going on, right? Entitled, right? I mentioned our adult children, that we're still involved. Part of what we deal with is entitlement, right? And they live in a culture that is the, I want it, give it to me now, I got it, right? You can't really fault them all that much, but it's exhausting. This is all we see sometimes. We get lost in the weeds, and these are the behaviors we see, and we step back and we think, oh my gosh, this is just a rotten little kid trying to ruin our life, right? I mentioned the trip to the zoo earlier, right? Everything was great. What's your problem? You know, that's what you want to say to your child. Everything was great. I gave you everything at the zoo, right? I shouldn't have because it's filled with dye and unprocessed sugar and it's terrible for you, but I still gave it to you. And you're acting like a monster. That's what you want to say. Maybe some of you do say it, and that's okay if you do. I'm just going to put your mind at ease, right? Let's just be real here. Defiance, the fight, flight, or freeze, right? The child who suddenly, at the drop of a hat, they're running from your house, right? Or like we parented a child years ago that would just, it's like the little rainbow wheel of death on your MacBook, if you have a Mac, right? The machine is frozen up. Something's intense, and all of a sudden the child just stands there, right? And you're trying to get a response from them. And if you were like us, before we got our act together, we would lecture, because we wanted that response, right? This in the weeds, guys, let's just be honest here. We are exhausted, we are frustrated, we are confused, we are defeated, we are this close to giving up, and sometimes this is all we see. It's okay if 5 minutes before you walked in, everything was melting down, and you're thinking, this is awful, and this child is awful, right? That we feel that way because we get lost in the weeds. This is what we see, but this is what's really happening with your child. Kristen actually drew that as an illustration to bring it into perspective. I know you're dealing with a child who pushes you beyond your limits. And you're thinking, God, I know you said you wouldn't give me more than I can handle, but are you sure about that? You know, are you sure you haven't given me too much? I saw a meme a couple of months ago from somebody that said, I know that no weapon formed against me shall prosper, but it's looking like these weapons are about to prosper. You know, you feel that way, right? But the reality is that our children, because of their trauma history, will often behave the unmet need. And you may be caring for this child for 10 years, 15 years, like us. We are caring our 21-year-old still. All of her needs have been met to the best of our ability for the last 2 decades. And still, she behaves unmet needs. And we have to consistently show up for her and meet those needs. This is what's really going on with your child. It's hard to see it when you're in the weeds, but we have to shift our perspective and start training and coaching ourselves to step back when those extreme behaviors happen and remind ourselves this is not a bad child behaving badly. This is a child who has experienced significant trauma and they haven't learned to meet their own needs. They're often in survival mode. They're trying to behave their unmet needs. They're trying to meet their unmet needs the best way they can, and the only way they know how to is to behave it, right? Just simply reminding yourself of that changes the game, right? Real quick, I want to give you a real quick illustration. You all seen The Wizard of Oz, right? Is anybody not? Anybody brave enough to raise your hand and say, I am so un-American, I have not seen The Wizard of Oz? Well, if you haven't seen The Wizard of Oz, I'm straight up about to spoil the ending for you, or close to the ending. So, Scarecrow, Cowardly Lion, Dorothy, Tin Man finally make it in to see the wizard, right? And they get into the wizard chambers, and what do they see? They see this awful, fire-breathing, you know, horrid face in the clouds, right? And they're trembling, right? It's terrifying. right? But in the, if you remember the scene, you know what I'm about to say, right? But in the process, what happens? Little Toto, Dorothy's little dog, right, trots over and pulls back the curtain. And what we actually see is this kind, gentle, grandfatherly man. So what we see before us is this, you know, what they see is this awful fire-breathing face. But what's really going on behind the curtains is something completely different. And that is an illustration for you to take home when it comes to your child's behavior, right? When you get lost in the weeds, simply saying to yourself, this is trauma behavior. Just even whispering that to yourself changes how you respond to it. Because what you want to say is, will you stop? Or you want to say, what is your problem? The truth is they may not know what their problem is. They may not know what's wrong with them. There's just this cocktail of feelings just swimming around in them. They don't know how to make sense of it, right? There's no such thing as a bad kid. You may disagree with me, but it's true when you change your perspective on your child.
One of the things that we talk about a lot at home is that there is, shouldn't we have done it right by now? Really, shouldn't this be going better than it is? But when we shift our perspective on our child and we remember all that has happened, all that has led up to us, it helps us to have resiliency ourselves, because we may get the pushback. We may get the smelly food under the bed, or we may get the child who keeps telling the school that we have no forks or something. We have forks. Don't worry. It's fine. But we may be getting that, and we start to feel stretched to our limit. But when we shift our perspective on our kids, we're telling ourselves, this is something else. This is a child behaving out of trauma. It helps us to bounce back into the role that we know we're supposed to be in. Secondly, we're shifting our perspective on ourselves. I don't know about you guys. Sadly, I discovered that I'm a 1 on the Enneagram. It means that I would really like things to be just so, and then I'm super hard on myself about that. So that's not fun. I was hoping I was going to be like the artsy 1 or the something. No, I went over it about 100 times, and then I was super critical of myself when I got the 1, and then I was like, oh, I guess that probably means I'm a 1. So when I shift a perspective on myself, I ask myself, what do I bring to the table? What did I already come into this relationship with? I came with my own history, my own trauma, my own culture, and I brought that all into this relationship with my child. I brought my own personality into this relationship with my child. I'm no master of the Enneagram, but I bring that up because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. When I start to be overly critical with myself, I say, you know what? That might just be the personality I was born with. And there are a lot of good things about that personality, but maybe this hard part of it is overshadowing some of the good things that I'm doing right now. So what did I bring with me into this relationship? I brought all of me. Understanding where I'm coming from actually helps me to bounce back, because I can say, right, I may be thinking this because I grew up hearing this from my mom and dad. Maybe that's not really what's going on right now. Or I may think, I may be doing a certain behavior and thinking I'm going to get a specific outcome, but I have to remember that that's my culture speaking, that's my upbringing speaking, that's my personality speaking. So understand yourself and what you've brought to this relationship. Secondly, understand what we have control of and what we do not have control of. Mike and I have brought up a couple times that we have adult children. You can't control another adult. I don't know if you didn't know this. We could try. I would like to meet you all at the back door as you're leaving, and I'll just give you some really solid adult advice. I don't think that you would enjoy that, probably. Maybe you'd say, who the heck is this person telling me how to manage my finances and when I should turn in my stuff for my health care and which job I should have and how much money I should have saved and how often I should clean my own apartment? Turns out we don't have control over other people. We don't actually have control over any other human. So when we can begin to shift our perspective and say, well, then what do I have control over? I have control over myself. I have control over what I do in my environment. I actually can help with my ability to have resiliency when I can put aside all the things that I can't do anything about anyway. With my adult children, this may mean I want to get up at 3 a.m. and send a really long text like, I'm super worried about your health care. They don't like that. I don't know if you didn't know that. Mom, stop. I was sleeping like you told me to. Okay. I'm just also worried that you're not getting enough water. Okay, I'm going. Goodbye. All right, so I don't have control over that adult child. I need to know what I have control over. I have control over how I participate in that relationship. I have control over how encouraging I am. I have control over how often I listen. I have control over how I respond. Maybe my child says, I just don't feel very good. Mom, what do you think it is? And I could say something like, I don't know. What do you think it is? I mean, I was thinking maybe you might like to drink more water. So I can shift how I engage with my child. I have control over that. I can lay awake at night and pray for my child. That is a good part of my insomnia right now. Raise your hand if you haven't slept in about 20 years. No, just me? Okay. So I can take the time to pray for my child, but I have control over myself and not them. There is no one right way to be a parent. This is so important. We can actually bounce back when we can value the way that we're doing our own parenting. Are you doing your best? If you're doing your best, ask yourself that. Am I doing my best today? I really am. Did I do as many good things as I could? I really did. Did I mess up? Yeah, I did. Did I apologize about it? I did. You are doing your best, and there's no one right way to do this. All humans are different. You are going to parent each one of your children differently. You're going to parent differently than your neighbor. You're going to parent differently than us. When we realize there's no one right way to do this, we put ourselves in a position where we can bounce back. It doesn't mean that the hard things go away. And often we can tell ourselves, if I just do enough right things, I will parent my child out of a mental illness. If I just do enough right things, I will parent my child out of the trauma behavior. If I just do enough right things, my child will be the valedictorian. It turns out that's not how parenting works. And so when we can shift our perspective on ourselves, we can take that pressure out of it and ease up a little on that overstretched rubber band and allow ourselves to bounce back. When we're thinking about self-care, often we've got this idea of like go to the beach, take a bubble bath. Those are awesome things. If you can do that, absolutely do that. But when you're talking about self-care, I want you to shift a little bit of that thinking as well. Are you meeting your needs? I'm kind of a, I don't know, I'd like to be the martyr. Well, I haven't eaten in a month, you know, just can't eat anymore because I have to meet all these needs. That's ridiculous. You must eat. I just didn't have time. I mean, my water bottle broke. Guys, my water bottle broke. It's so sad. I mean, I don't even know. I guess I'm just going to dehydrate until I die. That's ridiculous. Keep drinking your water. So when we're talking about self-care, I mean, would you just not feed your kids? No, I hope not. That's a bigger issue. Must feed your kids, must feed yourself. Must have enough to drink, must have enough sleep, must have time in community with friends. Are you going to a therapist? I know it costs money. Our insurance doesn't cover it either. Are you looking at your budget and saying, where in here can I take care of my own mental health? Where in here can I take care of my own needs? We're talking the bare minimum. When you wake up and you've had a good night's sleep, you are much more resilient as a parent. When you've had plenty to drink and healthy food and some exercise and some good friends, you are more able to bounce back from the hard things. The hard things don't stop happening, but when you take care of yourself, you can bounce back.
So to close this time together, self-care is great, right? And I mentioned earlier, it can fill us with a lot of anxiety just because we know that we need to do those things, right? We have to shift our perspective on meeting our own needs versus heading out to a mountaintop retreat, which do that if you can, right? But to close this time, we want to take you a step beyond self-care to what we call self-compassion. This is a phrase that you may not have heard of. It may be like, well, I know those two words, but I've never seen those two words together. Let me tell you a real quick backstory. It was April 2020, right? That probably fills a lot of you with PTSD right there alone, right? Everything had changed. And I was in this place where we had just had like 25 or 30 speaking engagements just wiped off the calendar, never to be rescheduled again, right? So I felt like I started to take that into myself, like, gosh, I know there's a pandemic, but I just kind of feel like a failure, right? Admittedly so. We were suddenly, now everybody was at home together and our kids were melting down, and our kids were, you know, there was added anxiety and added trauma. And we were just in this place where we felt like we're failures. I'm a failure, right? I'm a terrible dad. I'm a terrible mom. We were both going through this. And a friend said, listen, I want you to pick up the book Self-Compassion by Dr. Kristen Neff. And this book was a game changer for us, because what this book helped us to do was to take a step back and say, you know what? You're not a failure, and you need to start treating yourself with the same compassion that you would treat a good friend who was sitting across the table from you, pouring their heart out. Think about it like this. If you sat down to coffee with a good friend, and that good friend started to tell you about all the ways he or she was failing. I'm a terrible dad. I'm a terrible mom. I'm making my kids' trauma worse. I should never have adopted in the first place. I'm a loser. And the list goes on and on and on. You would not look at them and say, yikes, yes, you are. You know? I mean, at least we hope you wouldn't. Right? You're not a very good friend if that's the case. No, what you would say to them is, that is not true. You are a human being. And you make mistakes. And you would wrap your arms around them, and you would give them a hug, and you would tell them it's going to be okay, and you would tell them that they are a good parent, but they're parenting children who come from really hard places, right? So if we would tell a good friend that, why don't we tell ourselves that when we screw up? Not if we screw up, but when we screw up, right? The art of self-compassion is giving yourself the same compassion that you would give a good friend who sat down with you and poured their heart out, right? The art of self-compassion is choosing to accept that failures and mistakes are part of the human experience. We are going to mess up, right? Dr. Kristen Neff, I'm going to jump to this, says it like this, right? We're going to end with this. Self-kindness, by definition, means that we stop the constant self-judgment and disparaging internal commentary that most of us have come to see as normal. It requires us to understand our foibles and failures instead of condemning them. It entails clearly seeing the extent to which we harm ourselves through relentless self-criticism and ending our internal war. But, she says, self-kindness involves more than merely stopping self-judgment. It involves actively comforting ourselves, responding just as we need, as we would to a dear friend in need. And I'm going to end with this, and then Blaine's going to come up and give you guys next steps. This is something you hear us say all the time. If you're part of our Oasis community, we close every email, most of our video content with this, that you are a good parent. And you are doing great things. Ah, but you say, I don't believe you. I'm not. And I would tell you this. Yes, you are. Why? Because you're here. You're here. You're here to get to do better as a parent, to learn, to grow. And you are showing up for kids every single day, even through mistakes, even through failures. You show up. You are a good parent, and you're doing great things.
Thank you for listening to the Honestly Adoption Podcast, a resource courtesy of the Honestly Adoption Company. To learn more about us, visit www.honestlyadoption.com.